Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, June 19th, 2015, and this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Good morning and happy Friday. You gotta love it. I don't know, Fridays are always the same as Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, but at least it's something to look forward to. It is 58 degrees and overcast here in upstate New York. It's actually kind of chilly. And what's even more interesting is that it shows a real feel of 51, yet there's no breeze. So I'm not sure how the real feel in June, almost July, is lower than the actual temperature. Supposed to get down in the 40s tonight. So that's kind of wacky. But hey, again, at least it's not snowing. I guess I can be happy about that. So where did we leave off yesterday? The name of the show yesterday was Earth Running Out of Water, an Internet Truth Algorithm. If you remember, we had looked at a story out of phys.org where scientists had created an algorithm to scan in their experiment. It was Wikipedia, but eventually it's going to be utilizing the Google knowledge base for scanning for the correctness of facts. And of course, the correctness of facts are always subjective in that case because it depends on whose facts you're looking at. In one of the stories that we had read a few days before this, it was in regards to Google's knowledge vault. And I had mentioned this yesterday that Google is talking about a brand new way for ranking websites. It always had been in the past in regards to your search engine optimization, the number of keywords, the number of sites that link back to your site would always dictate as to how far up in the food chain your website or your link showed up in the search engine. Well, Google is now suggesting that what they're going to do is rank websites not in regards to how many link backs or keywords you have, but to rank websites in regards to quote unquote truth that exists on your website. And that's going to be all scanned against the Google knowledge base truth as to whether or not your website complies. And in the story read out of phys.org yesterday, they had actually even mentioned, and we'll scroll down just to remind you, because I actually found the Bill Clinton story that I had mentioned as well in regards to this. Where was it? Let's see. The measurement of the truthfulness of statements appears to rely strongly on indirect connections. Yeah, we talked about that. Although the experiments were conducted using Wikipedia, the team's method does not assume any particular source of knowledge. The scientists aim to conduct additional experiments using knowledge graphs built from other sources of human knowledge, such as Freebase, the open knowledge base built by Google. And it says misinformation endangers the public debate on the broad range of global societal issues. With increasing reliance on the internet as a source of information, we need tools to deal with the misinformation that reaches us every day. And somewhere in here, so I was trying to find. Somewhere in here, they actually talked about weeding out conspiracy theories and any crazy stuff like that that does not conform to the official narrative. Well, here I'm going to tell you where this all came from. I believe this was back from 2011. Yes, look, the story 5/13/2011. Bill Clinton create an internet agency. And this all spawned out of Fukushima. I followed this very closely from the very beginning, and I remember Hillary Clinton coming out and making some comment about how we shouldn't panic over Japan and we shouldn't stop buying their products because the Japanese economy was so important to the United States that we shouldn't pay attention to any of the internet rumors out there. And then Bill Clinton followed up. Of course, they wheel him out on their dolly every time they need someone to come out and say something stupid. And Bill Clinton comes out and says, hey, well, you know what? Maybe we need an internet agency to check the internet for truth. So here we go. This is out of Politico from May of 2011. Bill Clinton doesn't like all of the misinformation and rumors floating around in the internet, and he thinks that the United Nations or the U.S. government should create an agency to do something about it. So here we go, 4 years later, scientists at the, I think it was Indiana University, it was IU, but it was at Indiana, Indiana University, are creating truth algorithms, and that was the story. Scientists create computational algorithm for fact-checking, and they're going to partner themselves up with Google, who is one of the greatest storeholders of information on the planet, to do exactly what Bill Clinton had suggested. Clinton says it would be a legitimate thing to do in an interview that aired with CNBC. The agency, Clinton said, would, quote, have to be totally transparent about where the money came from and would have to be independent, because if it is a government agency in a traditional sense, it would have no credibility whatsoever, particularly with a lot of the people who are most active on the internet. Yes, all of those internet conspiracy theorists. Oh my God. So let's put Google in charge. Not that Google isn't in bed with the government every which way and sideways and has Kurzweil at the head of engineering and Regina Duggan from DARPA involved with all the smart technology. No, Google doesn't have anything to do with the government. Yeah, believe that one. All right, let's read a little bit more of the story. Quote, let's say that the U.S. did it. It would have to be an independent federal agency that no president could countermand or anything else, because people wouldn't think that you were just censoring the news, and they would give you a different falsehood out, said Clinton. That's it. It would be like, I don't know, National Public Radio or BBC or something like that. Yeah, what, one of those agencies that are federally funded and homogenize the news? No. Except it would have to be really independent, and they would not express opinions, and their mandate would be narrowly confined to identifying relevant factual errors, he said. And also, it sounds like Clinton thought a lot about this. And also, they would have to have citations so that they could be checked in case they made a mistake. Somebody needs to be doing it. And maybe it is a worthy expenditure of taxpayer money, says Bill Clinton. Now, guys, Bill Clinton, I'm going to blame him directly for the Ministry of Truth that is going to be clamping down on us anytime here pretty soon if it's not happening already. Interviewed alongside the CEO of a cybersecurity company, Clinton also said that he did not expect lasting impact from the documents disclosed by WikiLeaks. Oh, WikiLeaks was another reason why they went after this. Yes, so he didn't expect a lasting impact. Showing employees of the State Department, which is run by his wife at the time, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, assessing world leaders, I do not believe there is any lasting impact on our relationship. People know that we didn't do this leak on purpose. People know that the Secretary of State and her top team had nothing to do with this, or did they? Who knows what a tangled, wangled web we weave. Do we read any more about this? No, he's just talking about how nothing will ever come of this, and diplomats and those cables that were made public were just giving their impressions. Don't worry about it. Don't look at the man behind the curtain. Don't pay attention to anything, because we'll tell you what to believe. So anyway, it is in the process of happening. There was another story I saw where China, apparently, according to the mainstream news, got their hands on all the encrypted Snowden files, go figure that, and unencrypted them. But then I saw Glenn Greenwald came out and said that's absolute and utter bullshit, that nobody unencrypted the files. And he is now being sued because it was a story that came out of, was it the New York Times? No, it was a UK paper called the Sunday Times. That he's calling bullshit on. I guess it was the original paper that wrote the story about the Chinese hackers. This says it's actually the Russians and the Chinese. And hey, of course, it always is. Remember, the Russians and the Chinese are who we're going to blame all the hacking on. While what's actually happening is it's probably the guy sitting in good old Keith, former head of NSA and Cyber Patrol, good old Keith Alexander's Cyber Patrol Center. Because remember, there are hackers under every bed. There's ISIS under every bed. There's viruses never before seen under every bed. And you should be afraid, be very afraid, because the government is going to take care of you. But anyway, Greenwald is now coming under some fire because after he called bullshit on the hacking on Snowden's files, the UK Sunday Times is now slapping him with some sort of DCMA for copyright infringement. Hold on, we'll read about a paragraph of this, and then I want to get on to some other things. It says, the UK newspaper Sunday Times is accusing U.S. journalist Glenn Greenwald of copyright violations. And again, watch out for this, because these international trade agreements that are in negotiation right now also have big pointy teeth on copyright laws internationally, something which they haven't had in the past. And I truly think, and this is one of the reasons why I've been very adamant about ever using copyrighted songs in our bumpers on UCY, is because I think that that's how they're going to next try to shut down a lot of the alternative media, is using copyright laws and stiffer penalties to make a few examples of some people and shut them up permanently. Anyway, back to the story. The UK newspaper Sunday Times is accusing U.S. journalist Glenn Greenwald of copyright violations after he debunked the paper's report on Russian and Chinese spies allegedly accessing Edward Snowden's NSA links. Greenwald, who was the first to contact Snowden after he left the U.S. with his data trove, slammed the Sunday Times report, which cited unnamed UK officials as saying Britain had to pull back its agents from China and Russia because those two countries had cracked Snowden's document. And yes, they did say that. And, you know, remember, too, when they were trying to blame Snowden, and again, I don't know if Snowden is for real or if he is some sort of double agent. Sure seems to me like, even though people are calling him a hero, the fact that he brought all of these spying allegations to light with such documents that would prove that it's been going on for years. Like I said, it's not that any of us in the technology vertical didn't know that this was already going on. And really all it did was just kind of put it out there. So the American public goes, oh, ho-hum, they're spying on us every way and we have no privacy anymore. But what are you going to do about it? I mean, that's the way they do this stuff. They overwhelm you. So the first time you hear about it, you're shocked. The second time you hear about it and it's just way bigger than you can do anything about, nobody cares anymore. And I really think that it's more of a psyop than anything else. But regardless of what I think, let's finish the story. So Greenwald's calling bullshit now on this mainstream news article saying that China and Russia actually hacked his encryption and it put these agents in danger. And that was one of the things that came out about whether or not Snowden should be charged with treason. And being charged with treason would mean that he put security interests at risk. And a lot of people came out in his defense and said, no, he didn't put anything at risk. Not that people didn't know about any of this stuff before. And there are some programs that maybe they didn't know about. And I don't know, all their names escape me. There have been so many, you know, spy names for all the programs. Look it up, WikiLeaks. It's inconsequential to what I'm trying to get to. But regardless of whether or not they actually did any type of damage, this, by coming out and saying that China and Russia got their hands on the real information and now the UK had to pull spies back and their lives were in danger. Whoops, ding, ding, ding. Guess what? They just now put their dotted line to finding a way to get Snowden, if they ever get their hands on him, in court, and maybe they'll even try him absentia. Who knows? But now they have their proof, quote unquote, proof that he may have caused some damage and put people at risk. Anyway, in Greenwald, In his disproving report for The Intercept, Greenwald used a screen grab. So he used a screenshot of the Sunday Times subscription-only article that had said that Russia and China had hacked Snowden's encryption. And now the newspaper said that his screenshot violates the copyright of, quote, the typographical arrangement of their front page, unquote. Have you ever heard more absolute and utter bullshit? So their screenshot, their website, their front page, their typographical arrangement is copyrighted? How is that possible? Maybe their logo is copyrighted. I would be upset if somebody used a logo without my permission, let's say, and it was copyrighted. But the arrangement of their front page? The accusations come in a legal notice the Sunday Times sent out on Monday, citing the 1998 Digital Millennium Copyright Act, or DCMA, adopted by the United States. Now, this is a UK paper, and I don't think Greenwald's in the United States. I think he is either in the UK or hiding out with, I don't remember his name. It's Friday. It's been a long week. You know, the guy that's running WikiLeaks, hiding from the law. It says, anyway, the paper does not, however, respond to Greenwald's criticisms in which he called its article an utter lie, or translated utter bullshit, and an example of, quote, shoddy, primitive, unquote, reporting. What he calls into question is the sourcing of the article, as it, quote, does nothing other than, quote, anonymous British officials, unquote, leaving no one to keep accountable for the credibility of its claims. And I don't really want to get into the Snowden story. That wasn't my point for reading this. My point was that they are now trying to go after Greenwald, who called bullshit on a story that came out of mainstream, and they're trying to get him on copyright DCMA laws for using a screenshot of their story from their front page of their website. And I know they're saying that it was by subscription only, but whatever. The story was still printed and was disseminated. How many people do you see on YouTube that take screenshots of text-only stories that don't come out on a video or whatever and then do a discussion about it? So slippery, very slippery slope. And like I said, with these international trade laws being jammed down our throats, and I don't know if anybody saw, but in the middle of this Orange Lives Matters and now this new shooting by Dylan Floodroof, I think his name was, or Dylan Stormroof, that was his name, that happened down in South Carolina. In the middle of all the mayhem that got your attention, they actually went back and tried to jam through the fast track for the TPP again, and the House passed it yesterday with nobody paying attention, and now it's gone to the House again. So keep your eyes open on that, because that's something they don't want you to see as to what is going on. All right, I'm going to change gears now, because we've already wasted 20 minutes talking about not the primary topic I wanted to hit today. A few days ago, we talked about some genetically modified moths that were released in New York State without any real public comment or without letting the public know. They happen to be the very, very, very first insects genetically modified to be released on U.S. soil. Right here in New York State, up in Geneva by Cornell University, good old Governor Cuomo rubber stamped it and put it through. And how interesting it was to find that the company that was involved with that was good old Oxitec, the UK company that was working on those genetically modified mosquitoes that we had looked at a while back. That were talking about releasing those mosquitoes in the Keys. They had also released them in a few other countries, Cayman Islands. I don't remember where else, but in this article, I'm going to look at it, actually mention the other countries. So anyway, one of the things that we discovered about these genetically modified moths being released in New York State was that we found out that these moths were released very close to a bunch of organic farms. And these organic farms were never told that these moths were going to be released. And what the moths do is they lay eggs and the pupa then die on the plants. And I think they said, not cucumbers, cabbage and broccoli were very near where they released these moths. And once those genetically modified pupae died on the plants, it was going to cause the farms to lose their non-GMO organic status. And that is just absolutely wrong. Well, here it comes again, this time out of Discover Magazine, and they're going to try to make you buy into this genetically modified insect by telling you that it's going to cure and eliminate disease. And remember, guys, when we dug into the biowarfare program that supposedly no longer exists here in the United States since 1969, where we declared that we were no longer going to participate, and then in 1972 when Nixon inked on to the International Agreement Against Biowarfare, we found out that, A, number one, we never really ended the biowarfare program. They said that they were just going to focus their attention on vaccinations and being on the defensive for biowarfare. But don't forget that to create a vaccination, you have to have these pathogens in your hands. And one of the things that they were doing during the biowarfare program, and especially at Plum Island, was utilizing insects as disease vectors, where they were infecting the insects and then setting them loose. Mosquitoes were one, ticks and fleas were others. There were a few more, I don't remember what they were, but you can look that up by U.S. biowarfare history on Wikipedia, or go back to some of the old Before the First Cup episodes on the UCY YouTube channel, and you'll see it in the title. There was a lot of stuff we dug up there. But anyway, so now Discover Magazine is going to try to sell this to the American public. Genetically modified mosquitoes to eliminate disease. Oh, it's all for the good of the humans. It says a remarkable scheme to alter the pest's DNA could change the disease-carrying species for the better or wipe them off of the earth. Now, when we dug deep into some of the technologies that these biopharma companies are using, and especially in regards to the Ebola, quote unquote, Ebola outbreak, right? They were tinkering with RNAi and being able to flip your DNA switches on and off to be able to cure you of these diseases by modifying your physical DNA in your body. Or looking at the Gardasil vaccine, where they were using these virus-like particles, these synthetic particles, to go in and manipulate your immune system. And then we find out that, you know, they started manipulating DNA back in insects, one being the fruit fly, another being the mosquito, trying to figure out how to eliminate things. And what they're looking at how to eliminate mosquitoes and wipe them off the earth. Don't think that once they crack all of these secrets of the genomes, that they're not going to be able to do the same thing to me or you. All right, let's read the story anyway. Mosquitoes have pestered mankind for as long as we've had the wits to swat them. A mere annoyance in the temperate zones, mosquitoes in the tropics carry serious diseases such as malaria and dengue fever. The former causes more than 500,000 deaths each year. Oh, my goodness. Mostly among children under five. And the parasite responsible for malaria keeps growing more resistant to drugs. Yes. And good old Bill Gates, that is what he's dedicated the rest of his life to, is eradicating malaria. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization considers dengue the most important viral-borne disease in the world, with cases since World War II increasing 30-fold up to 50 million annual infections. If you block the mosquitoes, the disease vectors, see, they even mention that, you block their microbial payloads, but that is easier said than done. Since DDT was taken off the market, oh, damn, we took DDT off the market, and that's why this very potent pesticide was taken off the market. Now it's all the environmentalists' fault that these mosquitoes have become resistant to anything. Mosquitoes in Africa, Asia, and Latin America have evolved resistance to today's less toxic chemical sprays. Biological methods, which pit other organisms ranging from fungi to fish against mosquitoes, have only seen partial successes. So in their options, with their options dwindling, researchers have turned to genetic engineering as the last resort and a new frontier of mosquito control. Yay! All about genetic engineering, saving the human race. Isn't that the way they sell it to us? The ambitious goal here is to alter the mosquito's DNA to insert a change on the chromosome of not just laboratory captives, but of an entire species. And we had read about something a few months back where they've been using this CRISPR-9 technology to edit the genome. And then once they let it loose, it actually infected the entire species. Now, think about that for a second. They're experimenting right now. This is the great big petri dish called Earth. And they're experimenting on insects like they have for 100 years before they ever get to humans. But when they crack that code, don't think that that technology is not going to just slide over until we have some outbreak never before seen. So there's an emergency declared where they can get it fast-tracked for human testing. Because I will guarantee you that that is in our future. Anyway, back to the story. There are two basic approaches. The more radical of the two, known somewhat euphemistically as population suppression, ding, 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 would insert a biochemical self-destruct mechanism into the insect's DNA, a time bomb to wipe out the whole species. Now, I can't emphasize that sentence more than I just did. They want to insert a self-destruct mechanism into the insect's DNA, comma, a time bomb to wipe out the whole species. Now, there are all kinds of animals that feast on mosquitoes, bats being one of them. And if you wipe out an entire species, that's called extinction, is it not? I mean, maybe they're talking about only wiping out one kind of mosquito that carries disease. But what right do we have wiping out entire species of anything? And who's to say that the entire species of unmodified humans won't be one of the items on a future list? Because potentially it could be. They've already talked about how they found markers in our genes. If you've had a hard life, if you've had a stressful life, if you were poor and you were raised with bad nutrition or made bad nutritional choices, they can identify all that in your DNA. And they specifically said in that story that we read about that, that you make bad breeding stock for future generations. There have already been accusations about the HIV virus targeting certain populations based on genetics. And, you know, I don't know if I've ever seen any real proof for that, but I also don't discount that they could definitely do that. I mean, all they've had this genome project, good old National Geographic had the swab your cheek back 20 years ago so we can figure out what your background is and where you came from and all the different markers for the different populations. They've been working on this for a long time. All right, back to the story. So where did I read that? Oh, yes, the time bomb to wipe out the entire species. But under a milder scenario called population replacement. So we have population suppression and then population replacement. Genetically modified mosquitoes would gradually displace the wild ones. For example, in experiments, scientists have transplanted genes to make the Anopheles mosquito resistant to the Plasmodium parasite that causes malaria. And this is, they don't actually talk about what they did or how they spliced, but that sounds very similar to RNAi technology, where you can go in, modify a gene, and make it resistant to then some process that happens within the cell once you've been infected with something. For dozens of the labs that work on the problem, so there's dozens of labs working on this, coming up with useful genes known as transgenes, that is not the hard part. It's how to transfer enough copies of the transgenes into the free-ranging populations. Yes, line right up, people, for your vaccines. But if the mosquito has an Achilles heel, it is that the mating instincts of the males, which fly like guided missiles to any females in the area. So the research strategy is to send males fitted with the new DNA warhead. They're calling it a DNA warhead to breed with the females. Let go by the millions, the altered males outnumber and outbreed their wild counterparts, and a large fraction of the following generation of mosquitoes inherits the transgene. Ideally, the process fuels itself as one generation passes the new gene on to another until they are all, and listen to this keyword, infected. Quote, once modified mosquitoes are introduced, says Nikolai Winbilker, a biologist at the Imperial College in London, essentially the mosquitoes carry out the work for us. Now, who's to say also? We've been looking at these micro unmanned aerial vehicles that they've been working on out of Harvard. Robobees.edu and MIT. I had also seen that there was some genetically modified mosquito. We've been looking at the genetically modified moths. We've been looking at the cyborg moths. We saw a Department of Defense film back like 4 or 5 months ago that had been from a few years ago, but I had been digging for it for a long time and I found it again, talking about how they could take out insurgents with these unmanned micro aerial vehicles that look like insects that could sneak in and out of buildings and inject you with something lethal in the back of your neck. Who's to say that they couldn't do something very much like what they're talking about doing in the mosquito population to be able to kill the unmodified, to allow the propagation of the newly modified? Who's to say that they couldn't modify mosquitoes to do the same to us? Just a thought. Anyway, I'm going to read a little bit more and then we're going to jump to a few more horrifying things that I found today. It says, anyway, that's how it goes in theory. So far, only one biotech company, the British firm called, and oh, who'd have thunk it, Oxitec, the same ones who convinced good old Governor, New York Governor Cuomo. They probably gave him all kinds of money because remember, I told you New York State is a money grubbing state. Cuomo allowed them to release those GMO moths, first state in the US. Aren't we freaking lucky? Manipulating. Oh, wait. So it goes in theory. So far, only one biotech company, the British firm called Oxitec, has conducted trials of modified mosquitoes in the field. Oxitec's target is the Andes aegypti, originally an inconsequential mosquito species found in the forests of North Africa, but now a worldwide carrier of dengue. Manipulating male mosquitoes raised from eggs, Oxitec injects a gene that makes a lethal protein in the bug's bodies. Guys, I don't know what to even say to this because this is very similar to what we've read about RNAi. They inject it and it makes a lethal protein. How could you trust anything that is injected into you in the future? Because I know I can't. I know I never did. Well, I did at one point, but I haven't in the last 3 or 4 years since I've dug into the biopharma industry. And now that we know that they're playing mad science gone mad, and there's all these agendas going on. How can we trust anything? Don't think that they aren't all. What would they say? They said hundreds of labs are working on these technologies. Anyway, Oxitec injects a gene that makes a lethal protein in the bugs' bodies. The transgenic males don't die because guess what? The gene's inactivated by tetracycline. So they just feed these transgenic mosquitoes that are injected with this lethal protein some antibiotics, and it stays inactive. And it says it's inactivated by tetracycline, a common antibiotic, which is part of their daily diet in the lab. But once they are released, the modified males round up most of the local females, and the offspring of these matings express the lethal protein into their cells, and they die well before maturity because there is no tetracycline antidote in their environment. So what happens is the lethal protein gets activated. They breed, they pass it on to the egg, and then the egg starts to grow. And while it is in its infant stages, it dies because it's got poison proteins in its cells. How horrifying is that? And again, like I said, okay, so who cares about mosquitoes? I mean, I kind of do because bats are endangered now. They're dying all over the place, and that is a staple food. And how is that lethal protein going to affect other animals down the food chain, too? I mean, this, again, is more genetic modification that has no real long-term studies. How is this going to affect mosquitoes that have this, that bite humans? That's a huge question in my mind. And again, can they then take what they're learning here and modify it to affect humans if it doesn't to begin with? Or then to put it into our vaccinations and, you know, hey, plausible deniability. What? You grow up, you get all your injections as a kid. You grow up 30 years old, you procreate and have children, and oh, your baby dies from some sort of unexplained sudden infant death syndrome at 3 months old. You know, how scary. I just can't get over how absolutely insane stuff like this is, and they're just allowing it to happen, and fuckers like Cuomo, he let Oxitec technology out in the very first place ever in the United States right here in upstate New York. What an asshole. It says field trials of this method in the Cayman Islands back in 2009 to 2010 and in Panama in 2014 and currently ongoing in Brazil showed good results, says the company. So look out. Let's pay attention to what happens in Cayman Islands, Panama, and Brazil in the future here, because these mosquitoes are out of the petri dish. For several months, the process kicked back local populations of mosquitoes by 80% or more. The next Oxitec release may soon take place where? Yes, in the Florida Keys, if the U.S. environmental agencies approve. And I'm going to say that that rubber stamp is coming, since good old Cuomo and the environmental agencies gave it the thumbs up here in New York. Says the Keys have seen a recent smattering of dengue. Of course, a drawback to this method is that the mosquitoes must be released repeatedly because the lethal genetic effect persists only for one generation. Well, phew. On the other hand, they could also serve as a break if something goes wrong. So let's release them and do a real-time environmental study because, hey, we built the brakes in. So nothing to worry about, nothing to see here. Wynn Bitchler's group in the Imperial College has come up with a longer-lasting system called the X-Shredder, referring to the mosquitoes' X chromosomes. The subjects of the experiment are the Anopheles mosquito, which transmit malaria. And again, the male is altered. this time with a transgene for an enzyme that cuts up DNA. In mosquitoes, as in humans, the sex-determining chromosomes are X and Y. When a male mosquito produces sperm, just one of these two chromosomes is copied. If a sperm cell contains an X and the X shredder enzyme slices it up, in effect, it aborts the cell, while the sperm cell containing the Y chromosome can proceed to fertilization. Because female mosquitoes always produce an egg with an X chromosome, the mosquitoes that survive are all XY, which will be only males. So we now have a way to shred X chromosomes and prevent females from being born as well. How disturbing is this? When Bichler's technology, if scaled up, could establish the X shredder gene in half the males of a full given population, and as they mated with a shrinking supply of females, the X shredder males would push the population lower until there are no female mates left. When Bichler says that it will be some time before he can test the mosquitoes in the field, though, we have to make sure that all aspects of safety and ethical considerations have been addressed. I mean, guys, this is just so beyond insane. And the fact that they're letting this stuff out into the wild and then they're doing experiments about, you know, oh, whoops, we made a mistake. I mean, it's just so disturbing. The story goes on, and I'm running out of time very quickly, and I have like six other stories that I'm never going to get to. But anyway, they mention a guy out of Harvard who helped develop the principles of that CRISPR-Cas gene drive, which allows them to spread these genetic modifications throughout an entire population. And then there's a quote here from Simon Warner, Oxitec's chief scientist. He compares the gene drive to a genie in a bottle. And he says, quote, once it's out of the bottle, it's gone. Well, I'm going to tell you, there were lots of genies in lots of bottles, and they popped a lot of the tops, spewing their toxic champagne all over, spoiling the waters. And it's out, people. It's already out, and it is gone. All right. Let's move on to the next story. And I might just have to do a couple headlines here so we can get to some of the big ones I want to talk about. This is another one that came out of Discover Magazine on the 12th of June. Scientists create sperm-producing female fish by turning off a single gene. Hey, don't worry about it if our X gene shredder goes awry and all there are of males left. Guess what? We're experimenting at turning off a single gene and making sperm-producing female fish. I don't know, or does that even matter? As far as next natural selection is concerned, sex is just about everything. You know, we're seeing all this gender bending in the news. And I mean, it had started back when we were looking at like Syngenta's, one of Syngenta's chemicals that was changing the sexes of frogs quite a number of years back already. And now we're seeing it happen with BPA and this whole transgender flimsy loss of testosterone male here in Western civilization. But hey, it's all normal. And guess what? Now we're even doing it on fish and mosquitoes. This is just it's not natural. This is humans with no ethics and no rules, just the dangling carrot of being rich and powerful, playing God. This cannot be allowed to happen. Says, as far as natural selection is concerned, sex is just about everything. All activities a creature engages in are in the service of reproduction, and that is across the entire globe, all life. It is to reproduce yourself. Not surprisingly, the nitty-gritty cellular details of reproductive biology are thus extreme interest to many scientists. Of course they are. Biologically speaking, Males are the members of the species that generate sperm, while females produce eggs. But now, scientists from Japan have shown that a female fish can produce a fully functioning sperm and would all the time if it weren't for the expression of a single gene. Well, I wonder if they found that out from heavy-duty radiation exposure, if that turned off a gene and they started finding female fish that were producing sperm. I don't know. I'll drop this into the notes of the show. I'll put it into the chat after the show if you want to read the rest of it. But I want to get a little bit further here. We had looked at using nanofibers back a few weeks ago to be able to insert them into the moth pupa that they were experimenting with, into the muscles and the wings of this moth pupa when it was in chrysalis stage. And then as the moth pupa grew, these nanofibers grew right into the muscle. So once the moth was an adult, they had a moth cyborg that they could literally control with a joystick. Well, here we go. Researchers have now worked out also how to mind control cockroaches. Engineering students in China have worked out a way to control live cockroaches using a brain-to-brain interface technique, essentially creating tiny biological robots that will perform the will of their human masters. Ding, ding, ding. I mean, guys, I don't know how many stories like this I have to read, but the writing is on the wall. It is coming, and you and me and everyone we know and love are going to be the next subjects, all under the guise of medicine and curing all of the diseases that ill us. Using the, and maybe the military as well, and fixing all of the damage that occurred during combat. Using the interface, researchers have managed to guide a living cockroach along S-shaped and Z-shaped paths just using their minds, presenting their research in video form at the IEEE Robotics and Automation Society's annual conference. The team of students at Shanghai Jiao Tong University describe how they fitted one of their team members with a Bluetooth EEG headset. And then the researcher then thought, so they're using mind control, no less. The researcher then thought about guiding himself through the S or Z-shaped pathway, and these brain waves were then translated into electrical impulses that were sent wirelessly to an electronic backpack receiver attached to the cockroach. They're going to use, I mean, I never envisioned this type of insanity. So we're going to be able to have people with these EEG headsets on that'll be able to manipulate and control, like a marionette, these controlled biological organisms to do their bidding. The electrical impulses then stimulated the antennae nerve of the cockroach through a microelectrode implanted in the animal's head. And through this nerve, the electrical impulses controlled its behavior and created what the students call a machine animal. A team at the University of Texas created a similar mind-controlled cockroach a few months ago with the aim of using, of course, the cockroaches to explore disaster zones to keep you safe, remember. The students from Shanghai believe that their cockroach could also be used to help out in complete, to help map out complex terrain, and also highlights how close that we are getting to a world like the one where James Cameron dreamed up in Avatar, where we can control other animals, albeit simple ones, with our minds. And that came out of Science Alert magazine. All right, I might get there. Here's another one out of The Verge. Now we've talked about all these never before seen. And at one point we had listened to a snippet, and this probably had to be 6 or 8 months ago, but we had listened to a snippet from Sophia Smallstrom, who had talked about this new crossover that they'd been finding between different phyla of the animal and plant kingdom, and how there was some real weirdness going on. We had also correlated that with some of the stuff that Dr. Huber had talked about in the very beginning, with some of the stuff that they were finding with glyphosate. Because glyphosate is such a strong antibacterial, he discovered that it was killing all the beneficial bacteria, not only in the plants and the animals, but also in the soils. But they were still finding this bacteria. They weren't even sure what it was. It wasn't a fungus. It wasn't a bacteria. It wasn't a virus. He declared it as some sort of new life form. Well, check this out. Microbiologists discover 35 new groups of bacteria in Colorado. The mysterious and diverse world of bacteria just got its very own expansion pack. A total of 35 new groups or phyla of bacteria have been discovered in the groundwater in Rifle, Colorado. They will likely add a bunch of new species to the tree of life. Species that are quite different from bacteria, scientists note. But here's what's really remarkable. The number of new bacteria groups is almost the same as the number of known animal phyla on Earth. Now, guys, what are the chances that we just discover 35 brand new life forms not on the tree of life, more than any animals that are on Earth right now, and we just found them all in one groundwater store in Colorado? Gee, who would have thunk it? Says we're always outnumbered, but you might still want to let the magnitude of this discovery sink in. Yeah, I'm going to. I think it's called Let the Genie Out of the Bottle Again, right into an aquifer in Colorado. Jesus. Says the number of bacterial groups discovered represents about 15% of the total number of all known bacteria that we have documented so far, says Jill Bansfield, a geomicrobiologist at the University of California, Berkeley, and the co-author of the study. This represents a substantial modification to the tree of life. The scientists analyzed the sample, and thanks to the DNA they gathered, they found brand new genomes. 8 complete and 789 near complete. But the 797 total new genomes don't necessarily mean that many new species. Guys, they found brand new freaking genomes. Oh, as we read about all this crazy mad science gone mad, genetic modification of shit in the lab, and then they just find all this stuff, they happen to find it in groundwater in Colorado, where we know there's all kinds of government agencies sitting up there. Does this sound like something that's been done on purpose? I can't believe that they just dropped out of the sky naturally. Each genome comes from one organism, but some of the genomes are so close to each other that you probably wouldn't say that they were different bacteria. Well, few. But these lineages somehow evaded more than 130 years of microbial cultivation studies. Well, there you go. All right. Well, I'm not going to get to all these stories, but here's one to just kind of end it off here. Former CDC director. So as we're looking at the anthrax debacle that started with the CDC and then spread to the DOD, spread all over the world, active anthrax that we thought was dead, but whoops, it never died in the first place. Former CDC director Julie Gildersberger, no, Gildersberging, sells 38,368 shares of Merck stock for $2.3 million. Hey, they're always looking out for our best interest. Julie Burginging was in charge of the CDC from what, 2002 to 2009? Guess what? Right during when the CDC was sending out live active anthrax, by the way, as well as the DOD. She was the head of the Center for Disease Control from 2002 to 2009, which included the years the FDA approved also the Merck Gardasil vaccine. Soon after, she took over for the CDC. She reportedly completely overhauled the organization's structure, and many of the CDC senior scientists and leaders either left or announced plans to leave. Some have claimed that almost all of the replacements Julie appointed had ties to the vaccine industry. I got to get her name right. Gerberding resigned from the CDC on January 20th, 2009. And guess what? She took over as president for Merck's vaccine division, which is a $5 billion a year operation and the supplier of the largest numbers of vaccines the CDC recommends. Nobody is making sure you're safe. I don't have time to read the rest of that one. Here's the very last story that we're going to hit on. Why scientists want to look inside surfers' butts. What? Yes, researchers have taken the war on superbugs to a surprising new battlefield, surfers' butts. The World Health Organization considers superbugs or bacteria resistant to antibiotics the single greatest challenge in the world today. And these stubborn bacteria are increasingly found in the oceans thanks to marine pollution. Because surfers swallow more ocean water than any other beachgoers, roughly 10 times more than ocean swimmers, scientists are hoping to study surfers' guts in order to shed light on how superbugs affect humans. All right, guys, everybody have an awesome Friday. Make sure you stick around. Josh is live tonight, and LaVon is live for Antimedia Radio at 11 p.m. Great weekend radio all weekend, Saturday and Sunday, and I will catch up with you on Monday. Everyone have an awesome weekend. Take care.